It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee Ritchie and Andy Iannocco are here. We're going to talk about Apple's newest acquisition. It's all about face recognition. Do you have the right to repair your iPhone? We'll talk about that. And Buffett's big bet pays off. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for Twit's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. And thanks for your continued support. This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 547, recorded Tuesday, February 21st, 2017. Fine without the chime. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software used by over 10 million small business owners. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/MacBreak. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code MacBreak to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase. And by Squarespace. Make your next move. Make your next website with Squarespace's all-in-one platform. Visit squarespace.com and enter the offer code MacBreak for a free trial and 10% off. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we talk about the latest news from Apple. With Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. He's up in Montreal. Hello, Renee.
Hello, Leo. It's like plus 5 degrees. Everything is melted. It's supposed to be minus 30. I don't know how to live.
Balmy weather in Montreal.
I just hope we're not flooding you guys with tons and tons of melted snow right now.
So in my head, I'm multiplying. So I'm adding 32. That's 37. Then multiplying.
It's above freezing. It's never above. Usually it's 0 Fahrenheit at this time of year, and right now it's above freezing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And Andy Iannocco's here. He's in the Atlantic Northeast.
We're Pacific in the sense that we're peaceful people.
The peaceful Atlantic Northeast. He's with the Chicago Sun Times, and both of course are regulars as we conjoin each Tuesday to confab on the Macintosh.
You're the human centipede of Apple News.
Oh, you know, I never, well, I don't know.
I've never seen it because
no, let's not.
I trust my instincts.
Yes, exactly.
The Netflix having a description about it was enough to give me nightmares for a year.
Apple buys Israeli facial recognition firm Real Face. Speaking of centipedes, Real Face. And then this is a company that does authentication via face. So the speculation would be that this is maybe face recognition in the next iPhone. What do you think?
And they've had face recognition software for a long time, going back to just on the Mac in iPhoto, being able to do face detection.
That's different from authentication. Yeah. That's a separate
absolutely.
Kind of thing.
But I mean, it's something that they've been doing for a long time, and something that they get better and better at. And this looks like a logical next step for them.
Yeah, but it is something that if you really want the kind of security that matches up with fingerprint authentication, you do need special hardware. And so things like having a 3D camera or just basically creating a face forward camera that's black and white and has the sort of frame rate and resolution that can tell you not only how many pimples you have, but how many pimples you had in high school.
But
infrared in and out.
That's exactly right, because I don't think I've ever signed into this once I set it up. This is the Windows machine, the Surface Studio. It has Windows. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. And it recognizes me. And that's
is
awesome.
It British, Leo? Hello. In my head, it's British. It's like, hello, it's you,
hello.
Leo.
Hello. 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 I like it. I mean, it's, you know, you probably have seen me before the show. I have to make this upright because that's how I did the original recognition.
Is it like using the global entry machine where you've got to get closer, go further, line up, look in, stare, open your eyes wider?
That's actually a good question because it can be that way. Android had facial recognition a couple of years ago on a number of devices, including Google's own Nexus devices, and it was much like that. And if you were wearing glasses, it wouldn't work. If it was a different, if it was dark and you had done it. So it was not really, and it was slow. Samsung also had this. I think still has this. And it was slow.
Aspirational.
It works. I think it's less good for mobile and better for desktop. Yeah. And as you point out, you have to have a special sensing camera that does infrared, which is what this is. All Hello compatible machines on Windows that have to do face recognition have to have what's called a Hello camera.
Yeah. Because it's the penalty for this not working is starts off as it's frustrating to use and the user will turn it off, and it ends with anybody can just get your 8x10 color glossy headshot and get in that way. So that's why it's a really strong thing.
Anyone in a Nixon mask?
Oh, let's pretend to be Nixon. You can pretend to be Gloria Steinem.
Well, that raises there's a couple of issues. How secure is this? Can it be spoofed?
It's convenience. It's a username. It's not a password. And that's why I think they're doing iris detection as well as facial. Like, they want to start building up multiple vectors of authenticity.
And iris is why global entry, you're always doing this, because you're looking. Yep. I mean, and iris is a little harder to do.
That's why 3D cameras are the hardest one to spoof, because the amount of trouble you have to go to spoof an adequately implemented 3D camera system is much, much greater than simply getting out the screwdriver, because you're right in front of this computer anyway, and pulling out the hard drive and running away with it. So that's kind of the gold standard for now. Also, I was just going to say that I was reminded of how good Apple gets at making something so convenient that you never want to use anything else. I redeemed an Apple gift card, like a physical gift card, and I haven't done it in a few months, and I was just blown away once again by using just the camera on my iPad.
Isn't that great?
And looking forward to just, I guess I'll just like hold it up and move it inside the little box it gives me. But while I was moving it, it just said nope. I saw like a CSI Miami sort of. It was grabbed and tilted like where it was like 18 frames ago. Nope, good enough. Like, what? Really? Really?
Oh, I don't know if it's new in iOS.
That's the sort of stuff they're looking for. Oh, no, sorry. It's not new. I was just using that as an example.
Oh, no, not that. But I mean, I was at the restaurant yesterday and I was trying to buy tickets to a show at the Bell Center, and it didn't take any of the accounts that I have. There was no PayPal and there was no Apple Pay. So I said, input a credit card. And immediately a little pop-up came and said, do you want to scan your credit card? And I said, sure. And then I held my credit card up and scanned it. And it said, and then it gave me all the autocomplete buttons for my address and my telephone number. And I just went tap, 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 tap. And the entire thing was filled. And filling those things in on a mobile device has always been a huge pain in the neck. And it just gave me – it basically used Siri stuff to fill in everything, and I was super happy with it.
So facial recognition is often desired because you don't have to do much, right? You just – you're there.
You sit down and literally on the Windows machines, I love it because I'm sitting down and I'm literally, as I'm like putting my soda like on the table and scooching up, it has already authenticated me. And it's like it was unlocked for 2 days while I left it alone. So it really is
Apple
a
Watch
big,
is like.
Big –
Now the problem is, of course, that the iPhone has this really fast, really good, and we believe very secure system of fingerprint recognition. I don't know if it needs face recognition. I mean, especially since you often pick up your phone in such a way that
unlock it,
right? You get used to it. If the button goes bye-bye, I see what you're
working. Also, again, it's winter, which means not only gloves, but also like my skin is drier because it's not as humid, which means at least on my iPad, it's gone from one tap all the time to one, two, three. And sometimes
they are hugely moisture dependent.
Yeah, it's not good. All right. So the way face recognition works, every face, I'm reading this is from x-site.com, has numerous distinguishable landmarks. The different peaks and valleys that make up facial features.
Look, I didn't have the clearest skin in high school, but I don't have landmarks, okay?
You have landmarks.
My skin healed up nicely.
The distance between the eyes, the width of the nose, the depth of the eye sockets, the shape of the cheekbones, the length of the jawline. These nodal points are measured, creating a numeric code called a face print. And then it puts it in the database. And it is,
FaceTime to face print.
So, because of its convenience and its speed, this is good. And of course, government surveillance, police surveillance likes it because you don't have to have any cooperation. You just have to have somebody walking around without a ski mask on.
Without a Nixon mask.
Yeah. The company apparently isn't just for authentication. I had read that it was primarily authentication, but Their first product, which is called Pickies, oh dear, created a new way to enjoy photos with its recognition software, automatically choosing the user's best photos from every platform. So anyway, this is
sort of what the image processor in Apple's A-series chip tries to do already.
Likely this is an acquire, right? I'm trying to pronounce it with an H.
Like, the future coming slowly, but Apple went from acquiring Authentic to run, to pushing out Touch ID in a couple of years. Yeah. They're getting very quick about this kind of stuff.
Yeah. So would you imagine this means that the next iPhone will have face recognition, or it could just be for photos? It doesn't have to be anything more.
If they can, I mean, they're always looking at these solutions, right. And you never know exactly when it's going to ship because they have to get like Touch ID was so not last minute, but they could not get enough sensors to meet demand for that. Phones. This technology is always cutting edge, and that means it could slip a generation or so. But right. I think they want it as fast as they can have it.
Right.
And this, and given what they put on their website, there's a lot of different ways this technology could be applied. The most obvious is identification, but it's also things like upgrading the Photos app so that when you need to enhance an image, understands that okay, that is a human face. Not only that, but it's a human face that is turned that way and looking slightly upward. So this is where the light should be, and I should not when the user asks for more brightness or more sharpness, I should be gentle with this area of the image because they don't want the scar that they got jumping off a refrigerator when they were 5 years old to be outlined and made more easy to identify. So there's a lot of places they can use this, and because Apple doesn't buy a company like Google bought Nest, where great, we'll now bankroll your stuff and we'll make sure your stuff works with our stuff. It's ingest, consume.
Nobody else can get it.
You will serve you will now serve the collective, and so they could use that technology everywhere.
There's an analyst at J.P. Morgan, Rod Hall, who says that, in fact, when we go to the next iPhone without the built-in hardware fingerprint reader, that Apple will replace Touch ID with 3D face recognition.
Yeah.
Is that credible?
I'm still of a mind that I'd love multiple points of authentication if I can get it.
Yeah.
Like, the more, the better for me.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice that you can choose to... just like on my iPad, I can use Touch ID because it's really, really fast. And when that fails, I can use a passcode. Not only a passcode, but a really, really super long passcode that will take 80 million years to guess. I would love it if there were as secure of a way of just doing facial recognition. Again, just by whatever it has to happen so that I never really have to worry about the security of my device. Like the feature that Renee keeps mentioning, just the feature of I'm wearing an Apple Watch. The Apple Watch has been authenticated. It has not been removed from my wrists. So the phone says, okay, I'm good. Go ahead. You're unlocked. So multiple vectors.
The J.P. Morgan analyst Hall also said that having a 3D laser scanner in an iPhone could be beneficial for augmented reality or virtual reality. He says Apple is likely to eventually open up a 3D scanning API to developers who could use it to do everything from determining your shoe size for online orders to helping make sure you're properly fitted on your bike. That's an interesting application of this.
Yeah, but I don't think that's something that they would. They made a big, big, big brush fire out of deleting a headphone jack, saying that we need as much room as possible. I don't think that they would do it. I think that they would add a pair of 3D cameras to the front to make authentication much easier. I don't think that they would do that for a feature that they don't think is going to revolutionize the device, and I don't think that 3D scanning is going to do that. But having some sort of a 3D capture would be a really, really good API to add, so that you can just toss the phone inside a shoe that has good depth perception, multiple cameras, and being able to simply wave it around a house to get a read of the room, or even capture a 3D object. There's so many ways they could do that. They could have that too. Remember that I keep thinking about the Fire Phone from Amazon that was just a huge colossal failure, but it had a lot of interesting ideas that if a more grown-up company were to implement them might make a nice phone. They made for instance, one of the things they added to the user interface was that they used the two cameras that it had facing forward, so they could see not only 3D of your face, but also get a better idea of where are you looking and where is your face in regard to the phone. So given that iOS, one of the design pillars of iOS is that it's all on layers. You have sheets on top of sheets on top of sheets. One way of communicating those layers is transparency. But another way is to give that parallax effect a little bit, but make it actually tie into where the angle of the screen is as opposed to your in relation to your eyes. So there's a lot of that's putting two cameras facing forward that were just good enough to simply get a read of your face. That could open up a lot of interesting ideas for user interface as well.
Hall might have a little bit of a credibility gap because he also said that he thought that they would announce the new phone perhaps at WWDC, which they haven't done since 2010. Yeah. That seems. On the other hand, with a drumbeat of rumors, I mean, lots of them. Maybe Apple would maybe like to do a little bit of announcing. I see no reason for them to announce in June, right? They announce early only if it's going to take a while to get FCC approval.
Yeah,
or if something. They have significant changes for developers, but even then they don't have to show off new hardware. They can just sort of hint at it like they did with size classes before they did the bigger iPhone.
They could talk about could talk about iOS 11 at WWDC, and that would be sufficient, right?
This isn't like Google I/O where they will send 1,000 developers home with brand new hardware if they think that that's what's required. Apple knows they're going to get people on board, and the people that are really, really important, they will either be seated beforehand or they will say, guess what? We've got you a room for the next 6 weeks at this beautiful, beautiful inn that's next to the campus so that you can come to this locked office 8 hours to 10 hours a day to develop your software to make sure it works on the latest the hardware. So, no, it would be such a huge departure from everything we know about Apple if we were to see any iPhone hardware anytime before September.
How about let's see.
Red iPhones.
Yeah, I'd like red iPhones. It'd be nice. The I guess Ming-Chi Kuo is also saying that he thinks that the new 5.8-inch iPhone, and by the way, 5.8-inch is also speculation, will feature, quote, other biometric technologies that replace the current fingerprint recognition.
5.8 is just technology. Going bezel to bezel. It's not a bigger size. It is just going edge to edge on the current iPhone.
So he says that to distinguish between a larger one or a smaller one.
So the 7S and the 7S Plus will be pretty much, at least it's assumed they'll be pretty much what we have now, just the next generation. But the iPhone 8, quote unquote, or iPhone X or iPhone whatever they want to call it, iPhone Pro, would be the same size as an iPhone 7, but would have edge to edge screen. And that sort of works out to 5.8 inches.
I do like this. Another analyst is... At this point, you know, everybody's just throwing stuff against the wall, says that maybe the idea is to create a two-factor verification system, which I kind of like. I kind of like that idea. Yeah, you mentioned that, Renee.
Yeah, it's great for
enterprise. Why take, you know, if you don't have to take one out? Can you still do fingerprint recognition if the home button is now an on-screen button?
Yeah, the biggest concern for most people is the accessibility, because right now it's already a virtual home button. I mean, they got rid of the button last year in kind of a sneaky way, but they left a little dent in it so that people who did have lower or no vision could still feel it. If it actually goes into the screen, because they can just pave over that and make it a
touch area. So you still have a sensor, area. But it's underneath
the
screen?
Yeah, you still have the same... Yeah, so the camera would just shoot up through the screen. But again, would you be able to feel that if you had no or low vision, which is where this new rumor about a sensor area, where there'd be a sort of a separate area below where it had virtual buttons that wouldn't necessarily be screen real estate. It could maybe be shaped or feel different enough that people who have low or no vision could still feel it.
Yeah, but I'd be shocked if they haven't prototyped putting the sensor on the back, just like a lot of different Android phones do, particularly because that's historically where the Apple logo goes. So what could be more intimate than you touch the Apple logo from the back?
Touch your Apple.
Exactly. You put a little bit more of a little bit of an indentation. There's so many great things that happen when you put something like this on the back of a phone. Even when the first Motorola phone I had, that didn't have the touch, didn't have the touch sensor there. It was just a little divot. Such a simple idea, but not only does it allow you to have a round back that will lay flat and not wobble when it's on the table, but also it allows you, when you're taking it out of your pocket, to orient it in your hand just by feel. So I take it out of my pocket and I know that I'm holding it the right side up instead of upside down. So I'd be shocked if they weren't even considering it, if, given that the by far the most interesting thing they can do that is practical, realistic, and has a million benefits is to make the screen as keep the phone the same size, but make the screen bigger, which means that anything that is not a screen on your current phone suddenly goes away or finds another place to live.
Yeah. All them buttons going bye-bye.
All them buttons. Let's take a break. We'll come back. I have a question, a technical question I got about the new laptops on the radio show, and I did not know the answer. In fact, I did not know that things had changed about the startup chime, but we'll talk about that when we come back. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks. Are you a small business person? About yay high? No, not that kind of small business. A small business owner. You're not small. The business is. Or maybe you're a medium or a large business owner. I think a lot of people, or a freelancer or a, you know, sole proprietor, a lot of people who are, you know, don't have massive accounting departments. If you ask them, you know, have you been making a profit this year? They'd go, yeah, I'll tell you come tax time. If you're a FreshBooks user, on the other hand, you just go right to the front page, your dashboard, and you'll know immediately if you're in profit or loss. You'll know what bills are outstanding, what your expenses are. You'll know how you're doing. You'll be able to track everything. And it all starts with the invoice. That's how FreshBooks started. That's how I started using them 14 years ago when I was going to Toronto to do a call for help. Amber MacArthur helped me because I really hated doing invoices by telling me about a brand new startup in Toronto called FreshBooks. Now, in the time since, the decade since, over 10 million small business owners use FreshBooks because not only does it make it easy to make invoices, 30 seconds to a great invoice, does currency conversions. You can import expenses, time and hours right from the app, or keep track of hours in the web page, on the web page as well. They have a time tracker there as well. You can assign hours to specific projects or specific clients. You could track your time to the minute. And it all gets in the invoice. And the invoice, when you send it out, looks pro, looks, you know, it's got your logo, really looks great. And something unique, it also has a pay me button on it. And as a result, FreshBooks users get paid on an average of 11 days faster than the other guys. 11 days faster because your client, turns out, wants to pay you, get this thing out of the way, just as much as you want to get invoicing out of the way. You can always see which invoices have been sent, viewed, paid. You could see which ones are overdue, outstanding invoice totals. By the way, did you hear me say you could see which ones have been viewed? That's kind of cool. I wish I'd had that. Because, you know, a lot of times somebody slow pay will say, well, I didn't get the invoice, send it. You know, but this time you know, you can say, no, I saw you read it. you viewed it. You can manage team timesheets. It's become really an all-inclusive system for the non-accountant. But when it comes time to pay taxes, you'll also can get all those, you know, accountant-like reports, the reports your bookkeeper will want, like total profit, sales tax summary, profit and loss, the balance sheet, all of that. I love FreshBooks. Easy to use, easy to start, but it will organize you kind of painlessly and get you in great shape. And you'll know whether you made any money. Or if you didn't, who to talk to. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. You can try it free for 30 days. Have the run of the place, all the features, if you go to FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. And where there's a little field when you sign up. How did you hear about us? Please, if you would, say MacBreak Weekly, so that they know you heard it here first. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. You know, I listen to other podcasts, and many of them have the same advertisers we do. And I've realized it's now become almost a vote. When you buy a product that you hear advertised on multiple podcasts, the offer code you use is a vote for the one you like the best. So please vote for us. FreshBooks.com/MacBreak. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com, Andy Anacco from the Chicago Sun-Times. So when Apple released its new MacBook Pros with the Touch Bar, they said no more startup chime, right?
Yes.
And then for a while, you could do sudo nvram, which is a command on the command line, a command line that lets you change the non-volatile RAM and turn on the chime. Mm-hmm. Somebody told me that that was disabled in El Capitan. Is that true?
That, El Capitan that, specifically?
Well, there was an update to El Capitan that disabled the hack to turn on the chime.
I'm not running El Cap on anything anymore.
Just or not El Cap, whatever the current
Sierra.
One is.
Yeah, Sierra. Oh, Sierra. Okay, yeah. I don't know. I'd have to try that because I'm fine without the chimes. So
That's the thing. I don't notice and I didn't turn. Oh, shoot. I should have done this. I thought you would know for sure. I should have done this at home last night and I could have answered my own question.
In the first month when it happens, everyone's all upset about it. So we cover it intently. And then like after a few months, people are on to the next outrage.
Yeah.
So we.
Yeah. Nobody likes change, right?
No. And we hate boredom and we hate change. It's the continual. Yeah. It's the duality of our existence.
So it's just in case you're interested. You know what? Somebody at home, try this. Sudo nvram, and then the next word is capital B, capital A, boot audio, one word, equals, and then, you get the octal point, percent 01, which means true. And if you want to turn it back off again, it's percent 00, which is false, obviously. But somebody called the radio show and said, this no longer works. They updated. They did an update. You know what? I'm fine without the chime.
Yeah. Although, I mean, if you want to go to the manual effort of putting it back on, I feel like they should let you.
It feels like they should. Yeah.
Yeah. Like originally it was moved away because of the new way that it works. They were worried that it would just go off RAM because they automatically boot now. It's not that you have to open it up and then press a button to boot it. It will just boot whenever you open up.
And that's another thing you can change with the same command. But in this case, the parameter is auto boot, capital A, capital B equals 00, or restore it with percent 03. I don't know. Maybe that's.
Yeah. So their worry is that you'd open it up in a meeting and it would go bong and everyone would look at you all of a sudden.
I guess
so they
people
made it sort
complained
of stealth.
About that, right?
Yeah. Well, people internally kind of got awkward when they had opened it up.
But it would be nice to be able to turn that on and turn it off. One of the things that's kind of frustrating when you're trying to troubleshoot a problem is when you open up the machine and you don't know, particularly because there's nothing mechanically spinning, the fan isn't spinning even, and you don't know, okay, are electronically speaking, are you alive? And you're just trying to figure out get yourself out of this hangover that you are in right now, or are you dead? Are you like the Norwegian blue? So I can't say that it's impossible for someone to have a use for that feature. And I would hate it if Apple simply arbitrarily decided we're just going to lock it out forever for everybody.
That'd be weird, right?
Yeah. Particularly that sudo command. It's like, I love these commands that are, I love functions that are there for someone who wants to look for it, because someone who's going to look for that command and then open a terminal shell and then type this in character by character is someone who really, really, really wants that chime. And so that man or woman should have their chime back, damn it. But to say that under no circumstances could anybody have a cheery sound greet you when your machine wakes up. I hope there's a reason. It's not arbitrary.
Well, makes Wally sad.
The other reason I like it when Apple leaves stuff like this in is then a motivated smart kid is going to go, oh, I wonder what else NVRAM does.
Yeah.
I wonder what else that command does. And this is an entry. This is a gateway into learning. This is for all of us older folks who had to do this. This is a gateway into the guts of the computer. And I like that.
Well, it also means that if Craig didn't turn it off for Eddie and Eddie opens his machine at the exec meeting and the chime goes off and Tim Cook just turns those dark side eyes on him, he can very quickly go and change a setting, turn it back off again. I mean, everybody's a learning experience.
Tim Cook doesn't have dark side eyes. Come on. You can actually screw things up with this NVRAM command. And it's conceivable that Apple maybe changed what NVRAM could do or made it more complicated, because this modifies the firmware, so you could really,
maybe someone exploited it.
You could, who knows? Who knows? I mean, this is the man page. It manipulate firmware NVRAM variables. So, but you can delete variables.
Hey, kids, want free access to this adult site? All you have to do is type this into terminal.
Yeah, it could. Really could be. You can also put in boot arguments, which is interesting. So you could force, for instance, the computer to always boot into single user mode, or so it's very powerful command. Dates back to 2003. according to this man page. I guess NVRAM is the old PRAM, right? The parameter RAM.
Yeah.
It's the new name, non-volatile. All right, well, anybody wants to try this at home, go ahead. Let us know.
Uncle Leo says it's fine, Mom.
Let us know. Just remember,
anything you type after sudo should be checked, double-checked, and triple-checked.
Yes. Sudo is the Unix command, and in this case, it's the Darwin command that gives you root user privileges. You'll be asked for your password, and you'll have to have an administrator password to do this. And if you do, then, well, all bets are off. There's nothing you can't do, including erase the entire drive with a simple command. I think if you zap the NVRAM, you can still do command option PR. It will reset it. So if you do something and screw up NVRAM, I think it can be reset that way.
Reset the PRAM. Reset the PRAM.
Remember that? Remember those old days?
That was beautiful. As the tech support person in the family or in an office, if you just say zap the PRAM and restart, that gives you a good 8 to 10 minutes to then go and look for the actual answer.
Hit up Google, finish your coffee.
Yeah, get back to me. I hate these stories. Malware, Mac malware, and this is pinned on the same group apparently. That hacked the election. I don't know. This is a GarageBand malware. I noticed there was an update to Logic today. Maybe this is related. It's a vulnerability in the music creation software that could be exploited by an attacker using, and this is the thing that's depressing, malformed project files. So you could go to a website and say, oh, well, you know, it's just a GarageBand project. That couldn't possibly hurt me. But we've seen data files hurt people before.
Yep.
If the program that executes the data file has a vulnerability.
Remember when they were trying to be faster and they would just execute data immediately so that it seemed snappy? I mean, that was the whole Flash and Java problem.
It's a .band file. So
it's going to happen. I mean, as Apple gets a higher profile and even Macs get a higher profile and the targets become, because security is a lot of it is about economics. And when it becomes sufficiently economical to attack people with Macs, they'll do it. If there's a huge cost and almost no profile, it makes no sense to attack Macs. But if there's something you can get out of it, and especially things like ransomware now are cheap to implement and lucrative for them, they'll go after it. So it goes back to, like, not to sound too much like Steve Gibson, but how fast companies respond to this stuff that matters.
Yeah. And it could have something to do with the fact that, I mean, a little praise to Microsoft here, they've made Windows much more secure. And so the attacks don't generally go after Windows anymore or even OS X anymore. They go, or Mac OS, they go after apps that can be exploited.
Yeah, the web and now apps.
Yeah. By the way, I misread this. I was linked to the wrong article. This is the story. X-Agent is the Mac malware. It steals passwords, grabs screenshots, and exfiltrates iPhone backups. And this is the one that supposedly is from the same Russian group, Fancy Bear, that hacked the election. One of the ways that Russian groups one of the ways Russian groups got into the DNC is having specially coded malware and then spear phishing attacks.
Spear phishing, yeah.
So it would make sense, especially if it's a government, that they would work on the similar exploits that work on Macs as well as on Windows PCs. The Mac version of X-Agent is a modular backdoor. I used to have one of those, but I got it fixed. That can be customized to meet the objectives of a given intrusion, including logging passwords, snapping pictures of screen displays, stealing iOS backups stored on the compromised Mac.
I had a fascinating discussion last week. We were talking about whether you should encrypt backups or not, and I spoke to people who make backup software, and they say never do it because the data theft is not a big problem, but data recovery is a huge problem. And if you encrypt everything, you can't recover your family photos, your baby pictures, your tax documents, all that stuff. And then I spoke to the InfoSec guys. They're like, no, forget that. Encrypt everything. Bury it in your backyard. Stamp water buffalo on top of it. Salt the earth. And then you were getting into this whole discussion about whether you want to fail safe or fail secure, and there's no good – both of them have valid points, and there's no easy answer anymore.
Bitdefender, which is the security company that discovered this, calls this Russian hacking group Apt28, but they go under a variety of names, including Fancy Bear, Pawn Storm, Sednet, Sofasi. They've been operating, according to CrowdStrike, since 2007, they believe are closely tied to the Russian government. They're certainly Russian. They speak Russian. They work during Russian business hours. And you know what? If they're really hackers working business hours, they must be working for a government. Anyway, a lot of research on this. X-Agent actually is available for Windows and Linux as well as Mac OS.
They do the government work during the day, and they do the freelance stuff at night.
Yeah, yeah.
Hard to make a paycheck these days.
How do you get X-Agent? You know, watch out for attachments. You know, this spear phishing is generally the way these kinds of groups get in there, because they, you know, there's two kinds of bad guys. There's the ones who are trying, you know, doing ransomware and stuff, trying to make money, and they just send it to everybody. And then they're the ones who are particularly targeting the DNC or Sony or, Sands back end casino operation. They want to get in somewhere specific. Yep. And those are the ones that are often governmental, because they're trying to use, you know, it's basically a form of espionage. We're not likely to get hit by these kinds of things unless we work for the FBI or, you know, somebody like that. Because
when I used to work in enterprise, it happened back then. Someone would get an email and they would use an address from their email to send somebody else. So they thought they were getting the email from someone they trusted, and it would have something titillating like, oh, did you see these pictures? Yep. And they would click on it, and then they'd be in the network.
Yep.
Yeah. Or just simply enough, you spend a small amount of money on some really expensive SanDisk 128 gigabyte or 256 gigabyte flash drives, and you just, hey, look, some loser dropped a flash drive outside in the street. Boy, I'm not going to look for the owner of this. I'm just going to take it, and then I'm going to put it inside my computer and erase it. And then, yeah, that's how they get in. That's why a lot of computers, both the corporate and government levels, they will actually fill the USB ports with epoxy, because you're not allowed to attach anything to these devices. And we know that if we give you the possibility of doing so, you will try to do it. And that's why we had to cement those three ports over.
I barely stop people from tweeting their passwords. I mean, we got a lot of problems these days.
Why does Apple hate right to repair? That's the question. They've been lobbying strongly against the 8 states that are trying to pass right to repair legislation.
Yeah, I don't think they hate it. I think they don't want this. The way that they are seeing the future of their designs, I think, is that it goes in a different direction from making them repairable. And it's not that they're against repairability. It's just they feel like they can pack far more technology into a far smaller, lighter design if they don't have to worry about repairability.
And they have to. Let's go ahead. I'm sorry.
There's also the security issue. When we had that error 53, remember, because if you brought your iPhone to a third-party repair person, and there then was an update to iOS that bricked it because
that was an error
on Apple's part, but the reason for the error was they couldn't be sure the secure store was, you know, the integrity of the secure store.
They didn't
store
want
had been
people
maintained.
To be able to swap secure enclaves or touch ID sensors as a way to get around touch ID.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think Apple can make that argument that, well, we've built a totally secure platform, and one of the risks of having third party repair shops replace your screen is it's tightly integrated to the touch ID, and you're not going to have a secure platform anymore.
Yeah. But this is a really, really big issue, and I hope Apple loses this one hard, because the origin of this, of these bills, are companies like John Deere, who have been selling people farm equipment with proprietary connectors and proprietary end-to-end software and fittings and things, that with the idea that you instead of being able to fix your own things, you have to now get a service contract. You have to buy genuine parts, just like there was a time when you could simply refill a printer ink cartridge. Mm-hmm. But then companies like HP and Epson decide, well, what if we put a chip in that says that, no, you must buy a brand new one. It comes down to ownership. Does a company have a right to say that you can only, but we are going to be the exclusive source of parts, the exclusive source of service for this machine? And if so, how long does it take for those companies to decide, okay, so now we're just going to make sure that we bulldozer all the spare parts that we've got stockpiled after 2.5 years to make sure that people don't keep using a phone that otherwise could keep going for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years. I mean, there are cars that have I'm not talking about like historic cars. I'm talking about cars that were had a brand new owner and then someone bought it used after 3 or 4 years. They drove it for 10 years and then they handed it off to their son going to college. And then it spent its last 2,000 miles in the hands of a cousin who desperately needed a car while they were shopping for their own new car. And so you got 13, 14, 15, 16 years on the road because they could get parts for this thing. So it's convenience thing. It's an ownership thing. And for industries like farming, it is a survival thing. You can't someone who can fix anything with baling wire and a pair of pliers and tell them that, no, you have to make a service call. You have to have this guy come out with a box with a special computer in it just to say that, yep, we need to adjust this intake a little bit. Great, it's been adjusted. That'll be $8,000, please. That's no good. So that's why I hope Apple loses this one hard. We need some sort of a right to repair.
Interesting article in Motherboard. There are 8 states considering these bills right now: Nebraska, Minnesota, New York, Massachusetts, Kansas, Wyoming, and last week Illinois and Tennessee joined that group. But this story for Motherboard, which I think is very interesting, and let's give credit to the author, Jason Kobler. Says that a Nebraska state legislator called them to tell them about some of the tactics Apple is using. She said it's interesting because she is a programmer and has, she's in this Nebraska state legislature, but she's also a very technical person. And an Apple lobbyist came to her and said, look, tried to pull the wool over her eyes, basically. And she said, I'm more technical than you think. Then he said an interesting thing. The Apple lobbyist said, well, look, just change the bill. As long as you don't talk, as long as it doesn't cover phones, we don't care. In other words, you can say right to repair John Deere, just not right to repair iPhones. That's an interesting angle on that. Come March 9th, when there'll be a hearing about this in Lincoln, an Apple representative will testify against the bill, according to Kobler's article. And the source told me that at least one of the companies plans to say that consumers who repair their own phones could cause lithium-ion batteries to catch fire. Okay. AT&T said we're not going to attend or testify, and I understand both sides of it. There's got to be a way. And in the case of Error 53, Apple found a nice middle road, which was as soon as you had third party repairs on that thing, they just said, well, okay, now it didn't brick the phone. They just said now it's not secure. So what did they turn off Apple Pay?
Yeah, Apple Pay and anything that required authentication no longer worked.
I think that's not. That's a good compromise.
There's just so many ways around such things. I just hope that people have the right to find their own solutions. It still burns me that I have still in my office, I have a MacBook Pro that was about 3 years ago that had a bad trackpad that would have cost me close to $1,000 just to fix that bad trackpad because of the manufacturing process, the trackpad is part of that lowercase and the keyboard is also part of that lowercase. And we don't sell those assemblies separately. So you're basically going to have to buy 52% of a brand new MacBook in order to just be able to click things again. And it's like, okay, well,
my car panels are like that.
Yeah. That's
I had just, one dent. I had to replace the whole side of the car.
Yeah, that doesn't make you a happy consumer. It didn't make me one. But fortunately, I could replace it with something with a halfway decent keyboard, so I didn't think that much about it.
Yeah, and also there's a difference between a computer and a phone. So I would hope Apple would support the right to repair computers. I have a similar experience with a laptop many years ago. My good friend Tom Santos, who ran a great Apple a VAR store, they were an authorized Apple reseller in San Francisco, the great Mac Adam. Eventually, he had to go out of business because Apple basically did not give him any parts, any supplies of equipment or gear to sell. They just favored their own stores. But for a long time, Mac Adam was the place I would go. And I had before MagSafe, I'd broken off the power connector. I brought it to Apple. They said $1,000 to swap the logic board. I brought it into Mac Adam. He said, yeah, I'll be right back. And soldered it back on for $50. That's a big difference, and that's where right to repair can make a huge difference without compromising security. But I think on laptops, it's a little different than phones.
Yeah, the interesting, I mean, again, like, I'm of two minds of this as well, because on one hand, I'd absolutely like to be able to fix my MacBook Pro. I hand them down to family members and I'd like them to go as much as possible. And I want them to be cheap to repair. But, you know, when you look at the new MacBook Pro and the way they achieve a lot of the rigidity in the unibody structures is by making these one single unit things that don't bend or move or have multiple parts that get, you know, they get screwed together. So they are literally one block. And that is how not just... It's not a coincidence that they're like that or happenstance. It's a deliberate design decision to make really strong, really light computers. And that would have to reverse in some ways to make – it almost like be a Dell approach where, oh, the daughterboard's bad, but the motherboard's still fine. I'll put the new daughterboard on. That'll be great. Go out the door. And it's very different than the way Apple traditionally has approached where they want the features of computers to go. Not for repairability issues, but just for how they want to structurally engineer these things.
The state senator, by the way, I want to give her credit. She's a Nebraska state senator, Lydia Brash. And unlike a lot of sources, she went public. She called Motherboard and said she had been visited by Steve Kester, who is an Apple state government affairs specialist, a lobbyist. And Brash said, Apple said we'd be the only state that would pass this, and we'd become a mecca for hackers, bad actors. They said doing this would make it very easy for hackers to relocate to Nebraska. Come on. They didn't realize that Brash, besides being a farmer, also works remotely for a software company in Atlanta, has a background in computer science. She said, he really wasn't prepared for me to defend my bill. It's her bill. I think they were surprised to learn I've worked in the technology field for the last 15 years, even though I'm a farmer. Kester also was the one who suggested that if they just take the phone part out of the bill, Apple would go away. Brash said, that's tempting, but we need to repair consumer technology, too. The story they're telling is that we need to be afraid of technology. You don't have to be afraid of technology. You have to be afraid of the people who are trying to prevent you from knowing the things they know. Are these companies?
I think it's all fear. It's just laziness sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's I just in principle think that if you own a device, you should own it.
Whatever you want.
And I don't like the idea of an artificial entity saying that, well, it's not in our best interest if you hold on to your phone for 4 or 5 years. So we're going to make it really, really hard for you to do that.
Yeah.
So
I still remember that moment. My father used to build his own cars, take them apart from scratch, rebuild them, do everything.
Yeah,
he opened – I remember – I forget how old it was, but I wasn't that old. And he just opened a new car that he got and he just closed it, shook his head, walked away and never worked on that car again. And yeah, it was a really defining moment.
It's been
moment
going on for a while. I mean, you need a big computer, you know, for a while, the car companies would sell them to you along with all the repair manuals. So if you had enough money, you could start an independent repair shop. But
he rebuilt Alfa Romeos and now he's looking at a Tesla. And I don't know.
Those are as locked down as you can get.
But, yeah.
Because, and John Deere, too, because they say there's proprietary software in here. We don't want somebody to steal it. B, we don't want somebody to hack it.
Well, but also remember, that's the BS that John Deere was throwing around. They were saying that their proprietary software and proprietary connectors were protected by the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, and any attempt to circumvent the IP protection that they had put on it digitally was as good as trying to create 10,000 bootleg Blu-rays of Moana. And it's like, there's no equivalency there. We know you're talking bull. Just we know that you're desperate to say that we are trying to skin our customers out of every penny we can wring out of them. And we're hoping that the people we're paying to sling this bull feel like they're being paid enough to not like have to sigh with every statement that we're telling them just to make in public. It's terrible.
If you're in one of the 8 states, lobby your member of the state legislature, your alderman, your burgess, whatever they call it. We talked to Kyle Weens of iFixit. Of course, he's very interested in the right to repair because iFixit sells parts and manuals, and they would love it if Apple would release their official manuals so that iFixit wouldn't have to guess on all this stuff and make it up and do all the research they do, and they do a great job. He would also love it if they'd have access to official parts. That would make everybody happy, and that's one way Apple could solve this, train third parties in how to do this and maintain the secure enclave, things like that. Ween says if one state, any one of the 8 states passes it, that's good enough because, of course, then that state will require all this stuff be released and that'll just open it up for everybody. He said the easiest he thought would to get this through would be Massachusetts. So if you're lucky enough to live in Massachusetts, write your member of, what do they call them, Andy? Burgesses? There's some funny name for them. I don't know.
We basically call them Whitey's, Whitey's people.
Whitey's people. The Bulgars. No, not
Bulgars. Can you imagine, though, like iPhone 8 ships with a brand new OLED display, and they're like, where's the replacement parts? Where's the official replacement parts? We can't even make enough to ship the phone. Where's the replacement part?
Right.
I mean, it's going to be interesting.
Right. Right.
It feels to me like there's a huge overlap between this and the ongoing criticism of the pro market, where you look at Apple's numbers and less of their customers are pros and more are the mainstream, who have absolutely zero interest in any of this stuff, and they want to move more fully into that market. But at the same time, they have this traditional computer mindset, traditional gadget mindset of people who were not afraid to take apart ham radios or to build their computer from a DOS box or to use terminal and things like that. And those markets are increasingly – it feels like there's an increasing tension between those two customer bases.
Yeah. So who was it tweeted? There's pressure, speaking of the pros. It was Marco, I think. Marco Arment, who tweeted 500 some days since the Mac Pro was announced at WWDC, yeah. 1,532 days since it's been updated.
The ink isn't even red on the how long has it been delayed list. It's just like a deep wine color now. It's aging.
Yeah. Oh, it was Marquez Brownlee. He says, days since Phil Schiller said, can't innovate anymore, my ass, and revealed a new Mac Pro, 1,351. Days since the last Mac Pro update, 1,351. That's not strictly true because it was announced long before it was shipped. Nevertheless, an apt quote, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe we're just interpreting the punctuation of that statement. Maybe if we change that to an ellipsis or a semicolon, it would actually be truthful. He was just saying,
can't innovate anymore.
Can't innovate. Comma. My ass.
And it's my ass. Otherwise, it's
my ass.
You can't innovate.
Maybe he left out the its.
I
stormed into the office and I was yelling at my guys because I was as upset as you guys. When are you guys are going to get around to making a new Mac Pro? And then wise guys come back to me with a round Mac Pro and look at me here having to shovel this in front of you people. Yeah.
Well, not that I would. Maybe I would buy a Mac Pro if they released it. I don't know. I'm happy with this Surface Studio. Yeah. I have more and more computers with Linux on it. Almost all of my time is spent on Linux.
Can you run the Surface Pro as a display for the Mac Pro?
I wish you could, but I think it's the same problem that the iMac has, which is there's so much hardware in here.
Yeah.
People asked Microsoft, please release the Surface Studio as a not as a computer, but as a monitor. And they said, we can't. Or not. And I think it's the same thing. There's an ARM chip, just like there is on the iMac. Yeah. There's an ARM chip behind this screen. It's doing a lot of the work, I think.
I wonder if Apple will ever get so... The Apple's relationship to the Mac line will ever get so fluid that they would actually allow you to go to the iTunes store, go to the App Store and purchase a virtualization license for, let's say, $50 or $60 so that you could run it on one or two approved virtualization apps like OpenBox. Like VirtualBox. And so you could then go ahead and pick your own laptop or pick your own tower and at least run it in some fashion on those devices.
Well, that would be interesting.
They do seem to be like losing their interest in a lot of what they used to. They seem to have lost their interest in creating a real fluid, dynamic line of Mac hardware. They seem to only want to make these machines that they think they're really good at making or really interested in making. And of course tech support for that would be kind of a nightmare, but if they could also have like test app inside there that says, yeah, it turns out that it's running fine within VirtualBox and therefore it's not my problem. Take it to Lenovo, the Lenovo store at the mall next door. Oh, wait, there is no Lenovo store at the mall next door. Would you like to take a look at our new MacBooks?
How would you like a trip to China?
Yeah.
It feels more like, you know, the Mac is, they have the Mac as a kid and iPhone as a kid, and you have one kid who's just taking up all your time and effort right now. And it's not that you don't love the other kid, and if someone tried to take it away and adopt it, you'd be like, no, that's my kid. Leave it alone, even though you're not paying a lot of attention to it right now.
I feel like it's more like you've got two kids. One of them is like a brilliant, brilliant musician, brilliant, brilliant actor. That while well, they're on the Tonight Show and they're in a new movie, they're in the new Guardians of the Galaxy. They've got a one person show, and you've got another one that is working for Liberty Mutual Insurance, and they've been working there for 15 years, and now they're in a senior position. It's a boring job. It's a very steady job. They're good people. They're raising kids beautifully. They have not been found passed out underneath the table at the Golden Globes anytime. But it's because the other kid has the flashier job, the one that, yes, I'm her mother. I'm her father. Like, oh, well, I have also another daughter. And she's great, too. But, hey, did you see her in Guardians of the Galaxy when Groot trips over that alien who's, like, in a bag? That's Gloria. That's my Gloria. Yep. Show them some love. They're both good. You're both good kids.
It's my Gloria. We'll take a break. Come back with more. Our show today brought to you by The Tracker. Newsweek estimates the average American wastes 55 minutes a day looking for things they own but can't find. And I'm going to vouch for that. This morning I heard beep, beep, beep from the other room. It was Lisa looking for her phone. She pressed the tracker button. The phone screams. The tracker's, and this is, it's a tiny little thing. Now, what I do is I keep a tracker on my keys, and then I keep my keys, I'm cheap, chained to my bag. So that way, if I either lose the bag or leave the keys or the bag behind, the tracker will go bzzz, and vice versa. If I can't find my phone and press this button on the tracker, the phone goes, yeah, or whatever sound you program, even if it's silenced. But that's just the beginning. The tracker is also a Bluetooth device, Bluetooth LE. So you pair it to your phone. Your phone can actually control up to, I think it's 10 different trackers. So put one on your bike, put one in your luggage, put one on your remote controls, wherever it is that you lose things. And then if you leave, let's say your keys, if you leave your keys behind, let's say I had a great night in the tables in Vegas. I was playing blackjack, really excited, got so excited I left my keys on the table. Now I could go back up to my room and I could check my phone and it would tell me the last place it saw the keys. It'd be on a map on the phone. But let's say things get worse. Let's say some Macedonian sees my keys on the blackjack table and picks them up accidentally and brings them back home with him. Now what do I do? Because, of course, Bluetooth tracking is only good for 100 feet. As soon as you get out of range, that's the last time your phone saw it. But if somebody moves it, then what do you do? Well, that's why I think this is the best choice. The tracker has the world's largest crowd GPS network. That's because there are more trackers out there than any other Bluetooth device, not just in the U.S., but let me zoom out here. All over the world, 3.5 million trackers. That's at last count. What did they tell us, Lisa, when we talked to them on the phone? Was it like 100,000 a month they were doing? It was a huge number. So that's great. That means as you travel anywhere, you're going to have people with trackers. If your keys end up in Macedonia, the next time somebody walks by your keys with the tracker software on it, it's going to say, hey, I see Leo's keys. And it's going to go, hey, Leo, I just saw your keys. They're in Macedonia. Not that that will help me much. Hopefully you'll find your keys before they end up in Macedonia. This is a cool map, by the way. If you go to the tracker, TheTracker.com, it shows the growth starting January 21st to now. This is 1 month's worth of growth. These guys are doing so well because they invented something brilliant. TheTracker.com, no E, thetracker.com, and you'll never lose your possessions again. And we got a little deal for you. So load up on your tracker devices. They have, by the way, they're small and light enough to put on a pet on a collar. In fact, they're about the size of a dog tag. And because they're anodized aluminum, you can engrave them. You can even put a little picture of your pup on there. Using their UV LED printing. We've got this tracker has our Mac Break Weekly album art on it, which is kind of cool. They also sell water-resistant cases, recommended if you're going to put it on an animal because, you know, they get wet. They also have metal carabiners, so you could put this on your backpack. So go to thetracker.com and get a free tracker after you've loaded up your shopping cart. Use the offer code MacBreak, and they'll throw an extra Tracker Bravo in there just for you, just because you listen. thetracker.com. The promo code MacBreak to get a free tracker with your order. Never lose nothing again. I love the tracker. Beep, beep, beep. I hear that a lot in the house now. Oh, you lose your phone again? Yes. It's not that she lost it. It's just, you know, somewhere.
It's not lost. It's not lost until I buy a new one. It's yes. here somewhere.
It's here somewhere. It's here somewhere. So, Berkshire Hathaway, Warren, no less of an investment light than Warren Buffett, stocked up on Apple stock. They have a $6.6 billion investment as of the end of the year. That's an increase of 200% in the fourth quarter. That's even before Apple's numbers came out on the iPhone 7. Obviously, Warren Buffett took one look at it and said, buy, buy, buy.
I have mixed feelings on this. I mean, it's a great show of faith in Apple, but it's the guy who buys Coke and Gillette.
You can't knock Warren Buffett. He knows what he's doing.
No, not at all. But he doesn't usually buy hot startup tech. He usually buys, you know, very established companies
You know, what's interesting is he usually buys value stocks, which are companies that are undervalued by the market because that's where you're going to see the best growth. No one could argue that Apple is undervalued unless it is.
Yeah.
I mean,
chronically undervalued.
Yeah. So they had, as of December, you ready for this? So much, they made $1 billion basically in 2 months. They had $6.6 billion as of December 31st. As of Tuesday, it would be worth $7.7 billion.
A few million here, a few million there, all of a sudden it's real money.
Holy cow. Yeah, it does take money to make money. If you have, but just think of that, kids. If you had $6.6 billion, you could have another. You could have made $1 billion in the last 2 months.
And also, they can't take their money back into the United States for various reasons.
Well, Warren Buffett can.
Oh, okay, there you go.
he can sell that stock and cash out, but he's not apparently. So there you go. It's just, you know, for all of the talk about is Apple in trouble? Are they struggling? Is Tim Cook got the right path? Man, that is an amazing success story. Let's talk more rumors. This is from Macworld magazine. A release date for the Apple Car.
It's in the garage now.
It's a long, long winter. You're cooped up in your home office with nothing to report about. And you start typing, all work and no news makes Jack a dull boy over and over and over again.
Maybe stop staying in the big resorts over the winter. So this is this doesn't mean a launch of the iCar, but according to the rumor, Project Titan has been given till late 2017 to prove its feasibility. So
they do that regularly. They have exec reviews for all major projects regularly. And the last exec review for Titan is what led to Big Bob Mansfield coming back and everything that happened after that. So, I mean, that should be happening all the time. These are regular intervals.
Financial Times says, we mentioned this. Maybe we did
A while ago.
The McLaren rumor. Yeah. Wow. Yep. They cited three sources saying Apple is in talks to buy McLaren. What? That would make no sense. This is a Macworld UK rundown of all the rumors.
The page that shows up high on Google.
Yeah. So the question is there really any news here? The last thing we heard was that they'd kind of backed down on it. They were letting people go and
they changed it. They changed it from like a hardware platform to a software platform, so to speak.
All right.
If there was any chance of them actually shipping an Apple Car, I now think that's next to nil. Yeah. I think they're seeing a lot of the data that at least two other companies have, which is to say that it is such a why would you just like Apple has smartly said, why would we make like $50 blister pack like contract free phones you can sell at the drugstore when we can make kajillions only selling the $700 or $800 or $900 phone? And most of these companies have been looking into this. I have also said, why would we just dive head first into that pile of broken glass known as starting a huge huge complex auto company when we can just help an existing auto company make cars and sell them to cities as self-driving buses and self-driving taxis and self-driving trucks? It's just, there's just no money in it.
How's your Japanese, guys? Because I'm looking
at this
Mako Takara blog out of Japan, and that sure looks like a red iPhone in the bunch.
Every year since iPhone 3G, we've had this rumor. I love it.
Well, usually around Christmas. That's not fair. Like they just like type a bunch of squiggles there. They could be saying anything. And then later on, they say, "Oh well, that squiggle meant exactly the features
Don't
of the new
Kangist,
iPhone," and
Andy.
We were right.
Oh, he's a Kangist for sure.
Totally.
Well, we're just people who understand this language. We're just taking their word for it on what all this stuff means.
We are going to have a red iPhone, and everybody will love it, and nobody will be sad.
I'm just saying that they could be all having a really big laugh at our expense, or at least my expense.
I'd buy a red iPhone.
I'd love it. Oh, yeah. I mean, they had a red iPod. They had the iPod Touch one product red a while ago. And it was just,
Right? Now, this is not a new iPhone. This is the old iPhone, the iPhone 7, but with red.
Yeah, usually they do the new colors. Like if you look at their pattern, it's gold for the iPhone 5S. It's rose gold for the iPhone 6S. And then iPhone 7 didn't get a new design, but once again got a new color with the black. So they usually do it when they're not doing a big design upgrade to still make the product look new and fresh. So if iPhone 7S and iPhone 7S Plus don't physically look different, then having a red version would still once again make people, oh, look, you have the new iPhone.
I'm just going to say, those of you who mocked me, or buying a jet black iPhone and not using a case all this time, still looks fabulous. Yep. Love it. It's the most attractive phone I've ever owned. Yeah, there are, just as Apple said, little hairline scratches.
And black,
but that doesn't, but as they say on Antiques Roadshow, good honest wear.
Good honest wear. Yeah. The real negative, and I'm guessing your matte black doesn't do this, is fingerprints. You got to wipe this thing off a lot because it really is.
I use both. Like I switch between them still, and yeah, I have to clean it before I take any of those Instagrams.
Yeah, lots of fingerprints. I mean, it doesn't bother me, but I realize that that's probably unsightly for people if they're using close ups.
Where I notice it now mostly is because I got a car mount finally for the car to like. Just to have like Siri and all the different navigation stuff. And if I'm driving away from the sunset, that screen might as well be white.
But can I tell you something? Same thing with the Tesla, that big 17-inch screen. Yeah. You don't really want to see it when the sun just right. Man, this fingerprint, it's disgusting.
Yeah. my iPad too. It looks like someone gave birth near it.
Okay.
At the end of a long work day.
There you go. So maybe we'll get a red one. This would be in the March announcement where they will also announce an iPad Pro 2, according to the same analyst, which is a Barclays analyst. iPad Pro 2 12.9, iPad Pro 2 9.7, iPad Pro 7.9. That's a mini, right?
Yep.
And the 10.5-inch iPad Pro.
Again,
but he says that'll be in May.
It's just a screen size. It's the same size as the 9.7.
Right.
It's just got edge-to-edge screens. It's confusing when you word it that way.
Yeah. And remember with the iPad line, they've been very, very, they've seen a lot of good, a lot of common sense in allowing a real wide spread of price points, even if it means keeping older machines with older CPUs still on the market. So if they say 9.7, it might not necessarily mean a brand new iPad with a brand new CPU. It could mean, well, you can still get the 9.7-inch version of the iPad, but it only has 16 gigs of memory. But hey, that's plenty for most people. Yeah.
Is this credible that there would be May? Well, I guess maybe available in May, announced in March, but available in May.
Yeah, it's a huge question because like some people are saying, why would you go edge to edge with the iPad now and not say that as your big surprise for the iPhone 8? But you know, the Apple tends to ship things when they're ready, and it might just be ready and the right season for it.
Well, also, there's so much more room inside an iPad to make decisions like that.
Right.
And I think it's just going to be easier to do for all we know, it could be a way for them. Just to see if certain QC programs inside the factory are working correctly before they commit to the iPhone. Because remember, it's still if the design of the next iPhone is following the same path as previous ones, Apple is still having a lot of discussion about what it's going to be and what it's going to have, and they haven't yet committed to one single set of hardware features yet.
Well, I really hate doing rumors, but frankly,
Again, it's a long winter.
This is the season.
This is what we do before we decide which of the two dogs we like least and want to cook and eat because we're running out of food. We're sick of boiling snow for water.
Oh, let's see. What have I missed? What, there must be a story in here somewhere. There's a lot. You're right. There's a lot of think pieces about, you know. Well, we talked about the one yesterday, last week, where Apple is struggling to make M&A deals. And for the first, here's one from Forbes, for the first time, the Tim Cook era, Apple's finally firing on all cylinders. And these are just, you know, silly. We watched Carpool Karaoke last week, right? We did that.
Yeah, I love Gruber's take on that, where he's like, oh, look, the mergers and acquisitions guys. See, Apple needs more mergers and acquisitions guys.
But did we talk about WWDC?
Oh, they announced it.
Yep.
And they announced it's going to be in San Jose this year. First time in quite a few years, I think.
Finally, WWDC comes home.
Yeah, 2002, June, was it?
June.
That was the last time.
It's been that
23,
long.
I think, yeah.
June 5th through 9th. Where in San Jose?
Nowhere.
The McHenry.
McHenry. Yeah. Oh, it's McHenry, named after McHenry. The old mayor, yeah. Mayor McHenry. The McHenry Convention Center. It's a convention center in downtown San Jose. That's nice.
Yeah.
There's a great, my recommendation, great Original Joe's around the corner there. Go have a nice plate of pasta.
Yeah, I was making my decision or whether to put aside some money for WWDC this year. I actually spent some time in Google Maps, like walking around that neighborhood, because I think I've been to one thing at the convention center years ago. And it's like, because most of my, I think the having it in San Jose so close to Apple is really a big win for everybody. Particularly, it's not just the convenience of Apple having it so close to the campus, but it means that you can have Apple engineers there and not have to take off a whole day from their work schedule. They can just
It's an hour an hour back.
They can get lunch and just go over there and come back. There's more hotel availability. There's not as much inventory. But again, today, on my own selfish look, I was seeing, well, how much was if I wanted to go, would I want to stay in San Francisco and commute, or would I want to go to San Jose? And San Jose hotel rooms, they're a lot more than the last time I priced San Jose hotels.
They're more than they were last week.
But they're still about $100 less a night than you can get in San Francisco. The only downer would seem to be is that it really, San Jose, as big as it is, it's not like San Francisco, where people who are coming in from London and the East Coast who still want to do stuff at 2 or 3 or 4 in the morning can still go out and do stuff. It's like, oh, word is that there is a vending machine outside a gas station where you could, that takes kinda bills, like that. Where you can actually get a Pepsi. So it's
the strangest thing. I lived in San Jose for many years. It's a great town. It's safe. The area of the Civic Center is not exciting at all, and they still roll up the sidewalks, in the evening, and that's pretty much it. However, it's a nice community.
People enjoy
cocktails late into the night in that area.
Yeah, there's bars. It is possible anywhere,
right?
You know?
Right. And to be fair, people are there to get a return on their investment of their time and their money. So they're not necessarily there for a week's vacation, although it's a nice add-on that people will come in who don't have tickets just to hang out with people that instead of flying all over the world to meet with 3 or 4 people that they need to meet with, they can just get a suite in San Francisco and just hang out with all these people once at a time. So there might be a better focus. There might be a loss of people who might be applying for tickets just to get into the carnival atmosphere. Like I said, it's hard to find a real negative about moving the show this way.
San Jose feels very much like a kind of small Midwestern. Not small, medium Midwestern city. And it's just not San Francisco. But, you know, the Tech Museum is just around the corner. That's Woz Way. You know, Steve Wozniak put a lot of money into it. It's a great technology museum. There's an IMAX there. Great to bring the kids.
Yeah. Moscone South and North are under construction, so there's less stuff to have to maneuver around.
Oh, you think that's what happened? That they can't?
Well, West is fine. Well, West is still open, but North and South are under construction.
They're making huge add-ons. But I don't, even if they were available, I think that this made the decision easier, I think, for Apple, as opposed to force their hand to move to San Jose.
Well, it's also like the beginning. I mean, certainly from now on, Apple events will be on the new Apple campus.
Yeah, and that was also part of my thinking that I'm going to have to get used to. I'm going to have to find answers to how do I attend an Apple event in Cupertino.
Where do you think San Jose is slow? Cupertino is really slow.
Where's the new Blue Bottles? We have to solve these huge logistical problems.
Yeah,
Yeah. There's I think there's a great Hawaiian barbecue just around the corner.
Is there a Phil's? Yeah. Is there a Phil's coffee? No, yeah. I need to know these.
Actually, there might be by now. But Cupertino is not known for its deep sophistication.
It's always been, I would much rather stay in San Francisco and then either take the Caltrain or even an Uber or a Zipcar down there. As more expensive as it is, as hassle.
I think a lot of people do that. And you could take the train.
Caltrain stops close by, and then it's only about $8 or $9 via Lyft to get there. That's how I got around when I was there a few weeks ago.
Good news. There are two Phil's coffees nearby. On Stevens Creek Boulevard.
Not to do the humble brag thing, but I got to talk to Phil Schiller on the record about this because he was so excited about moving to the new location.
Because there's a Phil's?
Because he said it's like a real homecoming for WWDC Apple has been striving to do, they're working with the city because they know it's not San Francisco and they want to get together some fun experiences and some fun events for all the people participating. And also that they want to keep working on accessibility and things like that. The only thing, and I don't know if it's a bummer or not, but they can't change the capacity. It's still going to have the same number of people as if they held it.
Which is weird because that's a bigger place, right? Or no?
They said there's just a limit to the amount of Apple engineers and labs and all the different people who have to staff it and the amount of people you can fit in the sessions and all those sorts of things.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you go in there to learn about what's new from Apple and how to develop for it and all that. I mean, that's the real and I would say anybody who's interested in that, the less distraction, the better.
And Google moved to South Bay last year for I/O. So, I mean, it looks like it's
right. That's right. Google's down there too.
And they're doing it again this year. There's only just one side comment that, again, it really is nice to have the entire family together at once in one place. And when it's always under controlled events, it's a little, it's not as free flexing that, hey, I've heard about this. I heard about this Italian restaurant that has a Japanese chef and let's go there tonight and not have to go 20 miles away or 30 miles away. As opposed to here are the three sanctified locations that Apple has set up to make sure that the kitchen is prepared for engineers. For every single food allergy, every single nitpicky thing, and also every single piece of wall hanging that's going to be judged and blogged about, we're making sure that all of these restaurants and hotels are laying down the rubber sheets on all the furniture so that when we do that voodoo that we do so well, they will be able to reset it for the next convention of orthopedists.
I lived in San Jose in late 70s, early 80s, and I still have a lot of fun. In some ways, it's almost like my hometown. It was the beginning of my adult life was in San Jose, and I really liked it. And that was a very exciting time, the Apple and Atari, and it was a go-go time. But it's always puzzled me going back there. You know, the San Francisco 49ers moved down there too, so we go to Santa Clara to the stadium, the Levi's Stadium. It's puzzled me that here you have – it's a big town, and there's lots of people, and some of the biggest companies in the world are there in that area because that's Silicon Valley. But San Jose, which is the big city, is very sleepy. It's funny. It's just, it's pretty, but it's just not exciting, I guess, So we saw last week, that there was a strong rumor that Apple had made a deal with Samsung for 160 million OLED displays. Shortly before that, I guess we could have mentioned it on the show. It was on Valentine's Day, so I don't know if we mentioned this, but I don't think we did. A rumor that Apple's in talks with another supplier, BOE, for flexible OLED displays, which is interesting.
It doesn't mean you can shake them around and wave them. It just means that they can wrap around things.
They'll be like the Samsung Galaxy S8 or S7 Edge, which I really like, but I have to say there are issues with this kind of bezel-less design. It's hard to hold without putting your fingers on the screen. You can't, basically.
Bumper 8.0 will fix everything.
Yeah.
Well, also, I think we talked about this last week. There's a lot of a palm and fingertip rejection technology that's already in existing iPads and iPhones.
Oh, it works. It works on the Samsung, but it doesn't like to hold it by the screen.
Well, it's an aesthetic thing. When Samsung had the curved edge designs a couple of years ago, they were trying to make the edges do something, like have a ticker on the side that would have sports scores and things like that. And now they've accepted that, okay, it's just a thing that makes our phone look cool or helps it to blend in with the desktop. And Apple is nothing if they're not appreciative of how to make things look cool. And also, any trick that they can pull to make the next iPhone look so different from the last one, that it will just give you an extra 12 points towards deciding that I don't care if I bought an iPhone 7 last year. I don't care that it's still working perfectly. I want the new one.
Just before we began the show, so I'm not going to put you on the spot, Apple rolled out Mac OS 10, 12, 4, public beta 3, and 10.3 public beta 3 for the iPhone and the iPad. You probably haven't had a chance to play with those at this point.
So, Renee, I got the developer betas, but there's been so much to do at work that I haven't had time to really play with them. I did notice that feature where I was at the restaurant and suddenly it let me scan my cards and add a bunch of stuff, which I thought was really great.
Oh, you mentioned that. Yeah,
but I haven't had time to dig into to everything that it does yet.
These are public betas. I mean, should people do them? When you get to beta 3, no. That's pretty...
It's if you want to delay, like, access all the latest features as immediately as possible, and you're not adverse to a few bugs, you know, including resprings or springboard crashes. Or I haven't had any problems with it, and like you said, it's the third beta now, so it's more solid, and we'll probably get this for release around March, so it gives you a few extra weeks to play with it. Then go for it. But if you're somebody who has mission critical stuff, or you need your phone to work, like you work on call or something like that, then just always stay away and stay away from the release for a week or two as well.
Yeah.
So it just depends on your tolerance.
Yeah, I recommend staying away only because there are rarely any features that, oh my God, if only I could start using this incredible feature 3 weeks before anybody else. I don't think it's rare that there's anything like that in a beta. And secondly, at least my experience has been once a machine has become a beta device, you find yourself on the beta track and you have to, I find it hard to make sure that I've switched back to the general release installation after that. But if you, I would definitely recommend it if you're in any way a position of having to do tech support for your friends and your family or people at work. It's stable enough to use as your day to day, although it is a beta, and it will let you experience issues or differences before anyone else does. There's nothing, I think all three of us appreciate, there is nothing more embarrassing than confidently saying, oh, okay, just go into settings, go into general. Now under keyboard, there's nothing on there. No, general. Then settings, and then keyboard. Okay, fine. I've got my phone in front of me. I'll be damned. It's not there anymore. Why'd they put... holy cats. Why'd they move that? So train yourself, but don't trust your phone to it yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. I guess Apple is going to do a Series 3 Apple Watch, at least.
Oh, wow. Not getting out of the business. But it's doomed. Nobody buys smartwatches anymore.
At least there's rumors from DigiTimes that they're going to be trying a new something called a glass film display. What is a glass film touchscreen?
I'm not sure because I haven't had a chance to read it, and it looks like technical jargon.
Yeah. In place of the current touch on lens solution, which I didn't know what that was either. So it probably wouldn't make any difference from the end user point of view, but it may be
a lot of
technology.
It is implementation details.
Yeah. All right.
They're making an Apple Watch 3. Yeah, the question is when. I mean, it took them a year and a half to do Apple Watch 2. So would it really be a year later? Would it be a year and a half later again? Be interesting to see.
And I have to say, what's missing?
Some people, like, it depends on who you talk to. Again, everyone has different answers. Georgia, my colleague Georgia, would tell you she wants an always-on display and the ability for it to fit underneath the cuffs of her pantsuits, because right now it's a little bit too thick for that. So, you know, it depends if you want more fashionable choices or you want more practical choices.
I would wear it more if it looked
better. I
would wear it more if it looked better. It floats like a little pillow on my wrist. And I don't know if that's because the lugs are where the lugs are positioned on the watch itself or what, but it doesn't look that good. I like a round face too. You know, I'm wearing the Gear S3 from Samsung.
We hardly even noticed it on your wrist there. It was so svelte and...
Well, it's big, but it looks more like a regular watch, right? It doesn't.
Yeah, yeah.
But that bicep, Leo, that's getting impressive.
Are you like that?
Yeah. I mean, just moving the watch around is giving you.
No, that was, and I wore that for very little time. The Android Wear 2.0 from LG, Sport. That thing was uncomfortable as hell. I gave it to Jason Howell. He says it's too uncomfortable to wear too. So that's why I actually got this. Is the S3 Frontier, and I got it just to say. And, you know, well, what else is out there? And this is Tizen. This is not Android, but this is Samsung's. Yeah. And it works on all Android. It actually works on an iPhone, too, all phones. Mm-hmm. I like it. It's got a great display. Not always on, though.
No.
Nobody's doing that yet because it uses so much battery life, right?
Yeah. I mean, but a normal person just expects a watch to be on. Yeah, it's, you know, weird. They're just used to the watch being on.
It's weird.
On.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do like the bezel. I think this control bezel is a better way to do a watch than...
Feels like a combination lock.
Well, and it feels... It actually, it, you know, sometimes not dials, a larger dial with ballistics, that feels good. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I like tick, tick, tick.
Yeah.
I got to say, I've stopped using the digital stem like after the first couple of weeks with the Apple Watch. It's just my instinct is not to... do this when I want to scroll. My instinct is to do this. Yeah. And despite, and also it's in the summer and the spring, it does get gunked up just enough that there's going to be that little hesitation before it breaks free of the sweat and the gunk. And that's just enough that I just don't care about it. It's not necessary. And so I use the alternatives.
All right. I'm going to give a little extra time to the picks this week because one of the picks is going to take some time. It's a big story. And we'll get to that in just a moment. But first, a word. From Squarespace, the place to make a great website. With a new year come new resolutions, new ideas, new goals. Whether you're starting a business, changing careers, or launching a creative project, Squarespace provides the platform to make your next move known to the world. Squarespace is hosting, plus the software on top of it, beautifully integrated to make a site that will blow your mind. And it will look like you are the king of web design and web engineering, even if you know absolutely nothing about it. It makes it easy to create a beautiful, professional website for a portfolio, for an artist or a musician or a photographer, a professional blog, or an online store. There's no better e-commerce than Squarespace Commerce. It's the only platform that lets you create, manage, and brand your store in a consistent, beautiful way. Your shopping cart matches because it is all the same template. All the templates have commerce built in. Squarespace Commerce also has plans for all sorts of growing businesses. You can accept payments instantly. They'll handle that for you. Access to advanced analytics for commerce so you can see where your customers are going, where they're coming from, where they abandon carts and why, device filtering. There's a whole lot more. Squarespace also does domains now. You can get a free custom domain with an annual purchase. That's always been the case. And, of course, you always get access to 24/7 customer support. But if you have an idea and aren't ready for building the website, you don't have to build the site. You can just go to Squarespace Domains, choose from one of 200 top-level domains, all the big names plus some fun ones, and then register your domain with Squarespace, and you'll get a clean, spam-free parking page that looks great until you're ready to start building. Squarespace is the place. And I want you to check it out right now. Go to squarespace.com. Make your next move. Make your next website. Squarespace.com. Use the offer code MacBreak when you decide to buy, and you'll get 10% off. Squarespace.com. What's nice about them doing the hosting and the software is you get new features all the time. Security patches are automatically implemented. And it was a few months ago. It was so cool. I got an email. Oh, by the way, you want HTTPS because everybody's doing it. You know, it's secure. It's Google improves your search results if you do it. Just check a box. It was literally just checking a box. And now leolaporte.com is secure. HTTPS. I love it. Squarespace.com. Don't forget the offer code MacBreak for 10% off your first purchase. I think we should start with Renee because I think we're going to want to spend some time on Overcast.
Oh, I thought you meant Pokemon, Leo. I'm sorry.
Well, Pokemon Go is a big deal. What is it, 50 new Pokemon?
Well, we can do Overcast first, then we'll get
Let's
to that.
Let's do Overcast, because this has been getting a lot of news. Marco Arment is a beloved developer, worked at Tumblr, and he's done a lot of great stuff for the Apple community, Instapaper. And Overcast is a great podcast app, and he's really done a lot with this new one.
Yeah, so it was always an opinionated app, which I always like. Like, I don't – there are apps that are just try to be everything for everybody, and they do a lot of things but not all of it well. And then there are apps that are really opinionated. They take a stance, say, this we believe are the best way to do it. And that's sort of like where you get your tweet spots from and where you get things like Overcast from. And it was my go-to podcast player for a long time just because it made sense to me. You'd go, you'd find the episode and play it. And Marco has been evolving it, both the business model for it and the design for it for several generations now. This is the third version. And this one is really different. It's a big change. It's got sort of like a card metaphor now, where things slide up almost like Music App and a lot of other audio apps these days. So the way it works, the mechanic of the way it works is a little bit different. It took me a while to get used to it because my brain is not as elastic as it used to be. But now I like it. It feels very fluid the way that you move through it. It's also, he's got a manual playlist now. A lot of people wanted a queue function or an up next function. And he always thought that his automatic playlist and where you could manually resort things was enough. But now he's got a sort of a manual playlist. You can just add things to it from anywhere in the interface as you go. And he's changed the model again. So it's not just a freemium app or a a patronized app, but it's got advertising in it. And the change this time around is he's moving from Google Ads to sort of his own ad platform, because Google Ads were not, they were closed and kind of gunky, and he wanted to make a more streamlined experience.
Is this an example of the ad here in the lower left-hand corner, this Fusion? No, that's the album art. No, that's an ad.
That's the podcast art. Yeah,
that's the podcast art.
Sorry, I'm not seeing what you're seeing.
So where will what will the ads look like? I'm trying to find. This is his.
I'm a paid customer, so I don't see them.
Ah, there you go. All right.
But they might be there somewhere.
Do you think the Patreon plan didn't work, or?
He says it didn't work as well as it used to, and sort of I think the ads are a twofold approach. I think it's very Sun Tzu, where you have the ads in there, but they don't really make a lot of income. But what they do is they help encourage a few more percentage of people to jump into Pro. Like, it's never been great conversion on iOS historically. Like, people will just suffer through ads rather than pay. It's never been a great motivator for people to go pay, but it's probably enough that it moves the indicator for him enough into the paid version that it's worth doing.
Marco hates us because he never, ever shows any of our podcasts and any of his stuff, but that's okay.
Oh, you're beloved. You can't be.
I don't mind. That's all right. I think because he doesn't do video, I think that might be something about it. I mean, we certainly are an audio podcast for the majority of our listeners, but
also a lot of these are sort
it
of
works.
Like the,
I shouldn't say it doesn't work for Matt Break Weekly. It does. works
I listen
fine.
To Matt Break Weekly on a time. It's just, if you look at the list of podcasts he's featuring, it's people that he works with most of the
right,
time.
Right. Right.
So it doesn't have to get permission to use their artwork, and it can just sort of put them in there as a sort of a friendly gesture.
That's okay. Overcast 3, and is it free now?
Yes, so it's free. Again, you it is free. There is a paid. You can become a pro or a paid customer or a supporter. I forget what the exact terminology is, but I paid for like 3 years in advance because I didn't want to have to think about it for a while. And then that gets rid of. I think he used to unlock features, but then he decided that he was making a worse experience for people who didn't pay, and therefore discouraging them from trying out the features that might convert them into paid customers. So he just made it free and now with ads.
Nice. Overcast 3.0, it's out. And is it just iPhone, or do they have an iPad version? I don't think so, right?
Yeah, it's iPhone, iPad. It's universal.
Oh, they do have
He accidentally
iPad.
Discovered universal when he was playing with Slice classes one day. It was the accidental iPad app.
Oh, I can do it.
And then he made it all nice and proper.
All right.
Yeah, like you said, no video. And there's a web client as well if you want to listen on your Mac.
So, Mr. Rene Ritchie, you might as well talk about Pokemon. It's so funny. Yeah. This was like all we talked about for weeks. And then,
I mean, it's still like when you, so it's a fascinating case study, and I'd like to really hear more in depth about it one day. But basically, they were too successful too early on, and they programmed for this is what we think is going to be our success level. This is the built in buffer that we have, and this is what it ended up being. And there was just even Google server infrastructure just crumbled, and it created a bad experience. And they had massive amounts of engagement at launch, but they lost a lot of it because they had to go back and rewrite everything. And because they were redoing everything, they couldn't start adding new features. So he did an interview last week where he said that we had player versus player in trading, and we would have shipped at least one of those things last year. But we spent so much time just getting the game up and running for the amount of users that we had that it pushed back our roadmap considerably. So now they're sort of back on track. And they released Pokemon Go Generation 2, and that's 80 new. They previously released the babies that you could hatch from eggs last year. Sounds funny saying, but that's part of the game mechanic. And now you have 80 new Pokemon that you can go out and catch in the wild.
Nice.
And it's funny because, like, sometimes you'll say Pokemon Go and people go, "Oh, I'm nostalgic. I remember it." And other people would say, "Why are you wasting time?" But if you look at Google Trends or you look at just internet traffic, Pokemon Go spikes higher than an iPhone still. Like, it is just incredibly popular. And their servers went down again when the new update came last week.
Wow.
They got them back up fast, to their credit. They got them back up in a couple hours. But that's taking down Google data centers, which is not an easy feat. It is popular. And when I go places, I hear, like, you know, industry insiders and analysts go, "Thank you for writing about this stuff because we were confused and now we're playing way better." So I think it's got a much bigger user base than you would commonly see people talk about on Twitter and things like that. But It is a lot more to play now, and a lot of things have changed in the game, like which creatures can beat which creatures. So people who had these very powerful armies now have to go back and rebuild them. So it's a leveled playing field in some ways for new people getting into the game.
Well, here's something weird. I don't know if this is part of the update, but...
That's for your Apple Watch.
As soon as I... because I'm using Pokemon Go on the Apple Watch. As soon as I ran the new version, it said, would you like to update your health data?
Yeah, so on the Apple Watch app is a workout app. It's not just an Apple Watch app. So what it does is it gives you credit. Like, you'll hatch eggs and encounter Pokemon, and you'll get credit for the steps that you take. So you literally start it up, and you start up a workout, and you choose a Pokemon Go workout.
That's so funny.
And then it'll track you as you're walking, but you have to give explicit permission to do that.
Chikorita, Cyndaquil, and Totodile are here. Wow. Actually, they're here, literally. There's there's one right now. So, Gardner sent me a screenshot of Overcast with the iMore show playing. Thank you, Gardner.
Oh, nice.
And there's the ad at the bottom. So it's just like a lot of ads. It's just a little bottom little section there. Thank you, Gardner, for sending that along. So what level are you now, trainer?
I'm 36.
36.
Yeah, but it takes forever. Like, once you get to higher levels, it takes months and months. Some people are doing it. Some people got to 40. Someone made a calculator that told you you're basically like how much you do a day, and it said it would take me until like 2019 to get to level 40. Yeah. So I'm not really expecting much.
Wow.
I like it because I just use it while I work out.
Well,
I have
you're
the
walking.
Apple Watch
it's a great
app
workout, actually.
And I have this great wilderness park next to my house that's just huge. And I turn it on. It pings me when there's little creatures there, and it breaks up the monotony of the workout. And like, I have podcasts and things I listen to as well, but this is interactive and dynamic. And it's literally encouraging me. Like, I know this egg is going to hatch if I just walk 5 kilometers. Yeah. So instead of doing 2 kilometers, I go 5 kilometers.
No, I think that has real value to it. And having it on the watch is great because you can get notified. I mean, it just becomes part of your ritual as you're walking around.
Yeah, and you get credit because, like, I got to get credit for those rings. Otherwise, you know, I don't waste my time.
Yeah. Thank you, Renee, for the Pokemon update and for the Overcasts.
We went out this weekend, and there was I haven't seen it in a while, but there was, like, I always see some people playing because you notice the signs to look for.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's cold. It's cold in winter, so you really notice the signs.
Because they're not wearing gloves, for one thing.
We took my god kids. We went to the Olympic Stadium because they have the botanical gardens there, and there's a bunch of rare Pokemon that spawn there. And there was a bunch of families walking around again, playing together, who hadn't done it in weeks or if not months. So it was a lot of fun to see.
I just caught my first wild Centaret, or whatever that is.
Oh, and it's interesting now because there's like new game mechanics. So some things you can't evolve unless you get special items to evolve them. And some of them, they evolve into different things depending on whether it's day or night. So it's a little bit more complicated than before.
Ooh.
But I must have written 20,000 words on Pokemon Go this weekend, so I'm tired.
You should get rings for that.
I mean, it's so popular. Like, it used to be that people would complain, but now they're like, thank you, I'm saving this. Yay.
Ooh, a Slugma. Cool.
I haven't gotten one of those yet.
There's already a bunch of new stuff here. Oh, this is a red ring. I don't know if I'm going to catch
and you
him.
Now you don't just have raspberries, Leo. You have pineapples that give you double candy, and you have bananas that make them easier to catch.
Oh, you know what? They're making them easy to catch just to kind of get me started. So I got a Slugma now. Wow.
And it's add it to your Pokedex.
I already got two new Pokemon, and I just sitting here. Are you jealous?
I just think it's like, again, you could see like Harry Potter and the Amazing Beasts versions of these games and just ways of getting people out into the world.
Weren't they going to do that? That was the rumor. They were going to do that. I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, I think, again, like, the amount of people who took down those servers made them rethink their entire roadmap.
Yeah.
And like, you could see Terminator versus Bugs Bunny or something. I mean, there's a lot of things.
There's so much you could do with this.
Terminator versus Smurfs. Like, you hunt down Smurfs with the Terminator. There's all sorts of things you could do.
Aww.
It's just fun in the real world.
Pokemon says, I'm going too fast. I shouldn't.
GPS drift.
Yeah, GPS drift. Wait a minute. Another one. Holy cow, a second Centret. Eddie, while I'm catching the wild Centret in its native lair, why don't you tell us about your pick of the week?
Well, my pick of the week is a game. It's also about working with animals, but they're not fake animals. They're real animals. It's a game called Dog Sled Saga, which I first saw like in development form at PAX East a couple of years ago. And I was on the App Store. Oh, my God, they actually released it. It's great. It's a dog sled mushing game, but it's exactly the sort of game I love because it's the pixel art is gorgeous. And the mechanics start off really, really simple. It starts off as a very, very basic game where you're driving your sled dogs, and they keep going because you throw them treats. So you have to keep paying attention to your dogs. When they start panting, you need to throw them a treat, and there's a game mechanic to make sure you hit it correctly. It then gets a little bit more complicated because now you have a limited amount of treats to get to the to get you to the end of the trail. And then as you keep playing it, now you get to understand that each of your dogs has a different personality. And just like in real dog sled racing, there's a dog's personality may work great if you put him or her close to the sled in what's called wheel position, or it might if they're smarter and they're a little bit more spontaneous, they might work better in the lead position. Or you might discover that when you throw this dog one snack, if you throw them another really quickly, then they'll really, really respond. Or when they really, really come to life when they see like another team about to pass them. So if you can sort of keep abreast of another team that's within sight, that'll really work well. You can, and it's like it gets to be a little bit like car racing games where there's a season and you have to manage your kennel because you've just taken like your team out, and now you have to give them some rest. And you have the option of either just letting them rest, or you can play with them, or you can like give them training. And so it becomes not more complicated, but more rich as you start to get involved in, okay, well, for this race, I need 8 dogs. I'm going to have to, this one is too tired. I don't want to use him. This one it's a long distance race at night. So I don't think I'll want her in lead position. I'll swap out this other dog. But at its core, it's just a fun, beautiful, engaging game. I just love this sort of pixel art animation, and the depth of it just reminds you of what would happen if you had like a Sega game with a modern CPU. So $4, and I've been playing it like kind of constantly for the past 3 or 4 days since I rediscovered it.
I can't wait. Mush, you Huskies. It's how much? $4.
Who's your good doggy? Yeah. $4.
Who's your good doggy? Have some treats.
Available for the iPad or the iPhone. So you don't get like there's a scaled up iPad version. Nice. It's a real iPad version.
So as you know, I've been in a continuous quest to test all the mesh router solutions out there. Eero, a sponsor, one of them. Google used that. I have at home, I have the Netgear Orbeez. Those nice. Are really fast. They're not technically mesh, but they're doing something very interesting. I've had probably the best results so far with the Orbeez, although I keep trying more. And I just set up the Amplify HD. This is Ubiquiti, who kind of invented mesh.
Yeah.
This is their consumer version. A little less expensive than some of the other choices out there. For the 3 units, that the base station and 2 remotes, it's $349 list price. Shop around, you might get it for a better deal. That's the HD, and that's the one I'd recommend. They have a HF that doesn't do AC. It only does A, B, G, and N, and it doesn't have as many MIMO antennas and all of that. The HD is the one, and this, by the way, covers quite a large area. And one of the reasons I mentioned on Mac Break Weekly, it's easily the most pretty and Mac-ish of the bunch. This base unit, this square base unit, shows a clock, has lights. You tap it has a touch screen, and you can get additional information, including, and this is for me very valuable, the total amount of bandwidth that's gone through this, because I'm on Comcast and they seem to care about that kind of thing. These 2 remote units just plug into the wall. Now, that could be good or bad. There's no wires. It's a lot more convenient, but generally people have wall plugs at, you know, kind of ankle height, and a Wi-Fi would work best if you'd have it up higher in the air. So, you know, maybe that's a negative. What's cool about this is these antennas are held on by magnet to the base. So even if you knock it, it just pops off and pops right back on. So it looks like they might be a little risky to have those sticking out from the wall, but in fact, it's not bad at all. I think it's a pretty good system. I found good speeds. So far, of all of them that I've tested, the Orbeez has the highest speed. The Amplify software is iOS and Android compatible. It works very well. It's very easy. It was the easiest to set up. In fact, I didn't have to do any setup, unlike any of the other units. You plug in the base station, plug in the remote units. The base station finds and configures the remote units, and you're good to go. There's no configuration at all, which I think is a lot better. Supports all the usual, you know,
things and doodads and bells and whistles. All of these mesh routers are pretty comparable in capability. This, at this point, you have some really good choices, and I'm not sure which you would pick. Aesthetically, I think the Amplify is kind of cool because it has the screen. It's a little more visual. You can turn the screen and the LEDs off, but I like to have little readouts and things like that. So I can definitely recommend the Amplify HD from Ubiquiti, the people who kind of invented this whole system. For years, Ubiquiti owned it, and it was mostly used in enterprise, but was not used much at home because you had to have a Java-enabled PC to configure and control it. They've gotten better on the enterprise
level. It's nice because if your LG display goes off when it turns on, at least you have the display on the router.
I can't decide which I like the best. You know, I have a soft spot for Eero. It was the first one I used, and I've set it up for a number of people now. My mom's using Eero. She's very happy with it. I love that on almost all of these, I can check in on remotely. So I think I'm going to set my daughter up. I have a leftover Google Home. That's the one I like the least, the Google Wi-Fi. So probably that's the one she's going to get. But if her internet goes down or my mom's goes down, I can quickly check on the app and see what's going on with that. Same thing for the Amplify. Amplify HD, $349 list for three units. And they also sell, like everybody else, additional units to extend it. Do you use one of these, Renee, or are you using just a regular everyday router?
I still have my Apple Time Capsule. I was thinking of getting the Eero, but doesn't ship to Canada. And I looked at the other ones, don't ship to Canada. And it was such a pain. I'm not going to try to get anything across the border.
I think you guys have different. Do you have different Wi-Fi bands? Is that
maybe
why?
They just never submitted it to the CRTC for approval?
Oh,
I
that's
don't know.
Probably what it is. Yeah,
or it's just more complicated to arrange international shipping. But I've drooled upon them at several of my friends' places when I've been.
They
in the US
really
and
they do.
Had
Euros they make a difference.
Amplifies.
Yeah, they make a difference. We have a fairly. It's all one story, so our house is really spread out, and we need something. We've never had good Wi-Fi in that house.
And we have Jerry Hildenbrand, like you, looking at all the different ones, and he's just a nerd to do it. So
good. So I'll look forward to
whatever you guys pick will win. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to review the Amplify because, was it Engadget? One of them said this is the best. So I said, well, that's the one I haven't tried. So, and I've had a lot of respect for Ubiquiti, and I was very happy with it. The setup was as easy peasy, and that's one nice thing. Hey, I have another tip for you. The Twit store is now selling Make Twit Great Again hats.
Woohoo!
Actually,
Twit is already great, Leo.
It doesn't say that because we don't need to. We are great. You could choose from the Twit logo or twit.tv in writing. You be prepared. Lots of people ask you, why does your hat say Twit? We also have mugs and hoodies and T-shirts. We even have some special show T-shirts. Not MacBreak Weekly yet. Ham Nation, the screensaver's all about Android. We gotta get a MacBreak Weekly.
Twit Air Force is a nice Captain America vibe.
Don't you like that? I really like that one. Anthony Nielsen is our in-house designer for a lot of these. He just does a great, great job. But the hats are out, and these are nice hats. Very nice hats. $25 to $27.
Best hats.
I don't know why the logo is $2 more. Maybe it's got one more color. I bet you that's why. Huh? And if you want a red hat. Yeah, we sell them. That'll really confuse your friends and neighbors.
The Linux geeks will love it.
Gray, red, navy, and black. The Twit TV logo hats. The store is at twit.tv/store. And we do it for fun. I mean, it's not, I don't think this is a big money maker. It's not a way we support ourselves, but we do know that some of you want these. And so, in popular demand, we've made them. twit.tv/store.
Nonetheless. We're sending a box of these to Beyonce for her kids. One picture on Instagram.
Just one
it'll
Beyonce.
Blow up.
Can you imagine how Northwest, what is it? And Southwest, what's the other one? I can't remember. How many things like that must show up at the door every day?
Yeah.
Every day? Just wear these.
Please wear these. Please wear that.
Please. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I get it. One has a curved brim and one has a flat brim. I see. We have the $25 for the flat brim, $27 for the curved brim. I get it. And that's for the kids.
The amount of precision that goes into that curving process. It's not just random.
Not easy.
their fault tolerances. They throw out 7 hats for every one they ship with the curve, because the curve has to be spot on.
That is so funny.
Because the inside of the curve has to be just as good as the curve on the outside.
So you get a snapback or a stretch cut. Your choice. Ladies and gentlemen, I turned off my mic. It didn't conclude it that quickly. That almost concludes this edition of Mac Break Weekly. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Andy Iannocco, you'll find him at the Chicago Sun-Times. That's where he hangs his hat. You can also see him on the web at CWOB.com, the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth. And he does some very fine podcasts at Relay.fm, right next door to Marco. Is Marco in the next cubicle over there?
Yeah, and the coffee he brews, he doesn't share it, but oh my God, does it smell wonderful.
Oh, I bet it does. Rene Ritchie has his own podcast studio at iMore.com up there in Montreal. iMore is the place to go to get information about all things Apple, including Pokemon Go. And if you want to listen,
it's iMore. It's Apple and More.
Apple and More.
Yeah.
If you want to listen to the podcast, just go to iMore.com, click the hamburger, and look for the podcast menu. And thank you for both of you for being here. We appreciate it. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC. If you want to stop by, say hi. We'd love that. Otherwise, on-demand audio and video always available after the fact at twit.tv/MBW and wherever finer podcasts are given away free of charge. Do not pay for Mac Break Weekly. It's free. I said that. I don't think anybody's charging for it. Our Twit survey is running out in about a week. 1 week from today, we're going to finish it up at the end of the month. So we would love to hear from you if you haven't yet filled out the survey. Twit.tv/survey. It helps us better understand our audience, make programming that fits your needs. But most importantly, it helps us tell advertisers what they're going to get, which makes it a little bit easier to sell because advertisers, like anybody else, don't like surprises. So it would really help us. It takes just a couple of minutes. It's very quick this year. twit.tv/survey. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next week. Now back to work, because you know what? Break time is over.